Go ahead and be seated. Good afternoon. All right, next matter on calendar. Case number 65196, Lopez versus Lopez. Are we ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Counsel, if you'll approach.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Devney, and I represent the appellant, Rick Lopez. And I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
There are three levels to our argument, which are somewhat interrelated here. First, the district court erred when it ignored the existing custody arrangement. Primary custody had been granted to Rick Lopez in two prior custody proceedings. And Rick also had de facto primary custody, because Melanie had moved to Arizona and left the children 100% in Rick's care. When the court applied the law for the relocation decision, it ignored the prior custody determinations. Second, if this court decides that Rick did not have primary custody at the evidentiary hearing, then joint custody existed. And in that case, the district court used an incorrect legal standard for relocation by applying the standard for a primary custodian relocating instead of a joint custodian relocating. And third, the district court's decision was not fair and impartial because of the pervasive bias that was shown against Rick Lopez for his national origin, and favor was shown to Melanie for her ethnicity.
Was that objected to down below?
And not specifically.
I didn't see much in the record as far as that was concerned.
Yes, Your Honor. Not specifically for bias, Your Honor. Mr. Lopez did object. He was unrepresented and representing himself pro per. He did object to the conclusion at the conclusion of the hearing for the outcome, but he did not have the knowledge.
He didn't specifically object that it was the judge was unfair and impartial.
Correct, Your Honor. He did not specifically
bias.
Object.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The bias by the court was shown during the hearing by multiple comments and in the unequal assistance to the unrepresented parties. There was not substantial evidence that supported the final determination in that case, and the bias was so strong that a reasonable person with knowledge of all the facts would believe that the decision was not fair and impartial.
And again, if it wasn't objected to below, what's our ability to look at it, and why wasn't it waived?
Excuse me, Your Honor, what was the last part of the question?
If it wasn't objected to below, why wasn't that argument waived?
Well, Your Honor,
bringing it anew on appeal, if it was objected to below, the district court judge might have had an opportunity to address it, and if there was a concern, he would have an opportunity to cure it.
Yes, Your Honor, and we would ask for the latitude that unrepresented parties generally receive in order to get their case heard on the merits. Like I said, he did object to the decision at the conclusion of the hearing. He did not have the knowledge or the training to specifically object to the bias, and it would certainly be an uncomfortable situation for an unrepresented party to accuse a district court judge of bias at that time face-to-face. So in the interest of allowing the parties to have their case heard, we would ask for the latitude that many unrepresented parties receive.
And do you have any case authority to allow us to do that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
In this case, the record, well, let me rephrase it. In this case, we have an order that's very vague in terms of the findings. From your standpoint, what are the errors in the record as to the issue of substantial evidence as it relates to best interests of the child?
Well, there, as you say, not only are the findings vague, there are no findings in the order. And so there's no evidence on what type of analysis district court conducted. In the relocation decision, the existing custody is, there are different standards based on what custody exists at the time of the hearing. Our contention is that one of our arguments is that there was joint custody established, and therefore the court should have used an analysis under Potter, best interest of the children in Las Vegas with Rick or in Phoenix with Melanie. There was absolutely no analysis in the record or in the transcripts showing that the court went through that analysis. Which towns have the better quality schools? What are the living conditions in each city? What are the neighborhoods like? What are the cultural benefits in the facilities? There's an absolute lack of analysis of best interest of the child in transcript as well as the order.
So candidly, from your standpoint, it would not be sufficient for the court to just remand it back for findings. It needs to be remanded back for new hearing under the proper standards?
Yes, Your Honor. That is our request, that they receive a new hearing, new evidentiary hearing. For the other reason I mentioned specifically, that the incorrect legal standard was applied, as well as lack of substantial evidence. Our first contention is that Rick did have primary physical custody at the time of the evidentiary hearing. And like you mentioned, determining what custody exists at the time of the hearing is vitally important to decide what analysis the court will conduct. Rick had primary custody because he had been granted primary custody by the district court in two prior hearings. And he also had de facto custody because he was alone with the children. Now, those orders were temporary orders issued during the pendency of the action. But temporary orders are just and valid and do establish custody in accordance with the statutes and the case law.
That was because mom moved to Arizona and dad wouldn't concede that the children should go with her?
Yes, the mother did move to Arizona without the children. And yes, the father does want the children at home in Las Vegas with him.
Right. Okay.
Have the children been in Arizona since February 2014?
Yes, Your
Honor. Makes these cases very difficult for us.
And yes, Your Honor,
They're all difficult.
Relocation cases especially.
Would your client have the best interest of the... why would the children's best interest be with your client? What is it about your client's... makes it so that the move should be changed back to Las Vegas?
What were the best interest analysis, Your Honor?
Yes. As far as you're concerned, not what the judge is concerned, but what you're concerned.
As far as I'm concerned, it's much better. It's in the best interest of the children to live in Las Vegas with their father. The father has been with the children their entire life. The father, in fact, was the primary caretaker in the first several years of their life. And after that, they shared caretaking duties depending on the jobs. There are significant family members in Las Vegas, such as witnesses who testified, the grandmother and the aunt, live in Las Vegas. Whereas in Phoenix, there's nothing on the record showing their family members in Phoenix. In Phoenix, they're living in the house of the boyfriend or fiance. I don't know whether they're married now. But they're living in the house, somebody else's house, of a man they have no relationship with. And alternatively, they could stay with their father, who they have a strong relationship with, and the family relationships in town. The schools, there's no testimony whether schools are different, the quality of schools are different here or in Phoenix, although the judge seemed to think that just researching whether there's a charter school next door was good enough to establish best interests. But schools in Las Vegas are just as good as schools in Phoenix, and if the parents wanted them in charter school, they could do that as well here.
What type of visitation did the judge order for the... father?
The judge ordered any weekends, overnights, anytime he wanted to go to Phoenix, and extended visitation during the summer vacations, whenever the father, Rick, could go to Phoenix or had his summer vacation. The summer, Rick's schedule would control and preempt anything that was planned or scheduled by the mother. The temporary orders are valid and existing custody orders. NRS 125.480 says the court may issue custody determinations during the pendency of the action, and the case law backs that up. In McGinnis, this court analyzed NRS 125A.350 and specifically held that a temporary order establishes custody in accordance with the provision in that statute when custody has been established. So these temporary orders are valid and do establish custody in the form of primary custody to Rick. Now, respondent's answer mentions that no evidentiary hearing was held, so there cannot be a custody determination. But that's not a requirement under 125.480. 125.480 specifically requires an evidentiary hearing when determining family or domestic violence and when determining abduction of the child. It does not require an evidentiary hearing for a best interest of the child determination. So since Rick had primary custody at the time of the evidentiary hearing, based on two court rulings and de facto custody, the court should have considered him the primary custodian. And therefore, when Melanie requested to have primary custody and move to Phoenix, the court should have used the factors in Ellis versus Carucci as a modification of existing custody and then considered the move after that. And they abused their discretion by ignoring the prior custody determinations.
Okay, you're at your 5 minutes. You want to retain the rest of your time?
Let me move on quickly, Your Honor.
Okay, it's up to you.
The second layer of the argument is that if you decide Rick did not have primary custody, then there was joint custody. There's never been any finding that Melody would have primary custody, so joint custody existed. And in that case, the court abuses discretion by using the wrong standard again. As we discussed earlier, Justice Douglas, there was no best interests of the child analysis, which is required under Potter, which is the correct standard. He did not compare best interest of child in Phoenix with Melanie versus Las Vegas with Rick, but he did describe his process as a one-step, two-pronged analysis. And he said he's required by statute and case law to determine that if she had moved in good faith and if it worked in the best interest of the child. Now, that is the only situation that standard can be used is if the primary custodian is removing the child, okay, and the Schwartz factors would be used. The fact that he analyzed the good faith reason for the move and then granted her primary custody shows that he was considering her, or he basically granted her primary custody because she had moved and didn't apply the proper standard. For that reason, we asked this court to reverse the decision and remand to the district court for a new evidentiary hearing.
Did he raise the issue that she actually moved to Phoenix to be with the boyfriend, and then she got the job?
Yes, Your Honor, that was the pleadings.
How did the judge handle that? What did he say?
He didn't address it one bit.
So he didn't mention changed circumstances in any way?
No, Your Honor. He addressed it as an initial custody decision without consideration of the prior custody.
And she was still married when she moved to Arizona? She filed divorce after she moved to Arizona, right?
She filed before she left for Arizona, but she was still married, obviously, for 7 months until the divorce in January.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the Court, Heidi Stern on behalf of Melanie Lopez. In this case, as opposed to the representations made by appellant, we would argue that there was no prior custody determination that had ever been made. Certainly that was the belief of the family court judge as he looked at this case. And as such, both parties were on equal footing at the evidentiary hearing in January of 2014. I think that perhaps appellant's biggest problem with their argument is that they ignored this court's decision in Druckmann versus Rashidi, a 2014 case that is not quite directly on point, but as far as laying out the standard that should be applied here is directly on point. The standard to be applied when two parties approach the court on equal footing, one of whom wants to relocate. And in that case, this court said that the consideration the family court needs to make is the best interest of the child, would it be to reside with parent A in another state or parent B in Nevada?
Mr. Stern, why is it the best interest that the children reside with mom?
Yeah, the district court addressed that extensively. And I'll point out that at the evidentiary hearing, Melanie brought many witnesses on her behalf, her family, and the court actually did also question her boyfriend in Phoenix. So he did address that issue as well. The things that the district judge specifically looked at were the caregiving history of the parties. Now, in this case, both parties had caregiving history, primary caregiving history. Melanie's was more recent. Of course, the children had been residing with Rick Lopez for a few months, but prior to that, for 3 years, she had been their primary custodian. He considered the educational opportunities for the children, and I think took seriously the fact that Melanie had looked into extensively the educational opportunities in the area in which she was going to live in Phoenix, and took that very seriously. He looked at financial stability, of course, and as this court knows, that's one of the relocation considerations, is if a party feels that they need to move in order to better their economic circumstances, as in Drookman, that provides a good faith, sensible reason to relocate. It also is part of the best interest of the child. The district court also looked at the flexible work situation that Melanie had obtained in Arizona, which would allow her to work from home, be with the children after school, and really be a primary caregiver to them. And finally, as I said before, the court questioned extensively the family members and other parties who came to testify. I don't believe Rick had anyone but himself to testify, but the court also questioned him extensively. And that was the best interest determination. That was the basis for it.
Let me ask you this, and it makes it very difficult for us when there are not specific findings and conclusions. And going through the order in this case, where are the findings and conclusions?
I think this case is a difficult one. I don't know how common this is in family court, but certainly it was written by my client. Both parties were pro. They represented themselves. I want to say pro se. They represented themselves, and so, you know, they had to try and put into that actual order what they thought were the most important points that the judge wanted them to put down, and so it is lacking in factual findings. However, this court's obligation is to uphold what can be upheld under the record, and there is ample testimony. There's also, we included in our supplemental appendix, letters of character, witnesses, things like that, that also provide evidence to back up.
Sure, but again, it's difficult to find an abuse of discretion. Whatever your client wrote in, the judge still had to read and determine if it was sufficient and sign it, right?
Yes, I understand that, yes.
And so that just makes it difficult for us. And so I ask you the same question we asked Mr. Devney is, why shouldn't this go back for a new hearing and proper findings and conclusions to be made by the judge?
Well, I would say that one reason would be the stability of these parties and these children. The other reason would be that this court is able, if it wants to uphold the decision that was made based on the findings in the transcript record. I understand if the court prefers a better written order, and I think that's procedurally up to this court. But the court has the ability, I think, to uphold.
Well, and looking through the transcript, we've all looked through the transcript mm-hmm. as well, and you can probably admit it's a little bit disjointed.
There was lots of questioning by various parties. Yes, yes.
Well, if we do send this back, should we put the parties back to where they were prior to the order of the judge? In other words, children come back from Arizona and live with Dad?
I definitely don't think that would be in their best interest. I think that this court, as the Murphy decision says, this court can't reweigh the factors that the judge considered. And although, as you said, there are not specific well-written factors in the order, there are findings in that transcript where the court says, okay, so this is what happened here. This is what you've looked at with regard to education. He asked all of the right questions, the district judge did. He asked all of the questions that go to the
judge. But how do we know how he weighed those queries? You know, and it's a weighing process when you've got many inquiries.
And truthfully, the answers are questionable because one of the issues raised early on in education and as I say, seems to be the bearer of bad news listening to the radio, of who ranks worse, Nevada or Arizona, as to schools, so.
I think it was more the parents that he was focused on. He was focused on the parents' interest in the child's education.
Still, I mean, we look at schools the parent is going to put the child in as we start measuring best interest.
And I think within any state, and we're getting into a little bit of a political question at this point, but within any state, certainly I have children here, and I looked around and made sure that I found what I thought was the best opportunities for them versus a parent who doesn't think about it and just, you know, buys a house wherever or stays wherever they're at, even if, you know, or doesn't know anything about the school.
You are not faced with the court having to intervene to make a decision.
What's that?
You are not faced with the court intervening to make a decision.
Yes, no, that's true.
And pretty soon you'll get $5,700 per child. How many children do you have?
Two.
See? $10,000.
Yeah, we're really off track.
Well, you consider the best schools possible, private schools.
Sounds good. I'll let them know.
Of course, we've got to decide that case, too, someday.
I did want to go back, if I could, to Justice Cherry's question about changing things on remand, though, and just reemphasize that Murphy does say that this court, you know, should really not reconsider what the district court did when they're looking at an abuse of discretion standard. Certainly that's the case here where the children are now, you know, they've been stable for a couple of years now and are doing well. So,
would you like to go back and address the position as to custody of the child at the time? Did the father have custody?
So our position that there is no ruling on custody is based on the fact that Nevada statutes and this court require that custody determinations, and this is actually defined in NRS, must consider the best interest of the child. There must be a determination of that in order to make a custody ruling. Here, there was no determination of the best interest of the child or any inquiry regarding, or any evidence, really. That's sort of the crux of the problem. Prior to January of 2014, there was no evidence of what would be in the best interest of the child, so the court could not.
Let me take you back even that, because before we get into that, we look what order was in place. We have this semi-temporary order. What orders did we have in terms of who was
Oh, what happened at each hearing? Yeah, there was no custody order. So the first, Melanie filed for divorce. Immediately thereafter, just a few weeks thereafter, moved for temporary custody. Now, the court scheduled a hearing on that, but instead of ruling on that motion, it said, I'm going to allow the status quo to remain in place while you guys decide what you want the custody to be. I'm sending you to mediation. And so that's what he did. They went to mediation, and then there was a status check after that mediation. That was the second hearing at issue. At that hearing, the court said, okay, you guys decided not to decide custody, essentially, and now you are asking me to decide it. Okay, I'm scheduling a hearing on that. And that's what happened. So there was no consideration at that time, no evidence at all upon which the court could have based a custody determination, temporary or otherwise.
Opposing counsel also indicated that he had de facto primary custody.
Yes, that's true. He did have.
How are we to consider that in the scope of this?
I think that plays into the Druckmann case in the fact that both parties, if there's been no judicial custody determination based on best interest, the parties approach the court on equal footing, and the Druckmann case gives guidance as to what's to be considered, which is first the best interest of the child, and then if there's a relocation request, which there was here. The court can consider that at the same time. That's what happened in Druckmann. Now, one thing that I'd like to point out that was different in Druckmann is that in that case, the mother had actually taken the child out of state. And I know that certain justices on this court were concerned about that, rightly so, I think, in the dissent. And in this case, I want to point out that Melanie actually specifically made the decision not to do that. And that is what put her in the place she's at today. And so I would urge this court to consider that very carefully, her decision, because otherwise, if this court found that a status quo situation equaled a custody determination, it would put parents like Melanie in a very difficult position where they had to decide, well, I really need to go get a job. I really need to support myself after the divorce. But at the same time, I don't want to leave my kids because then That gives a primary custody status and a better status to my partner. But I can't take the kids.
I feel she did the right thing, that she didn't take the children. I think that she did the right thing by then litigating.
That's what it's all about. She did the right thing.
It seems to me, allowing the parents to mediate, try and work it out themselves without the judge becoming involved, I don't see a problem with that. And apparently they did come up with some type of a plan, as temporary as it may be. I'm not sure I see a problem with that.
Well, they actually.
My impression was, listening to counsel, there were several temporary orders imposed, and I just want to make sure I understand that completely.
There were not, as far as I know.
There was no orders until this hearing took place that we're discussing today.
That's correct. And in addition, when the parties had their mediation, they didn't actually agree that there should be temporary custody with Mr. Lopez. You know, they kind of left that blank, and they said, Court, we cannot agree on this. You need to decide it.
So you come back to square one, as opposed to having to analyze this as one parent having primary custody. And
it's an equal footing analysis, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should we be concerned by the argument that there was bias toward the father?
Well, my first response to that is there was no objection here. And I understand what the appellant is saying, that might have been difficult for a pro se party to do. But here, it's interesting about bias, because the appellant alleges that there was bias against his Mexican heritage, but at the same time, Melanie is part Mexican, so even if that were a bias, it would have affected both parties equally. The other thing I would say about bias is, when the court looks at this transcript, as you've done, in context, you can see that the court's questions are aiming at the best interests of the kids. He wants them to have exposure to their ethnic heritage. And he specifically compliments both parties on their attempts to expose the kids to ethnic heritage. You can also see that, specifically with regard to his questions to Melanie's sister, that he was pushing back at her. He was actually trying to get her to figure out if she was hostile. That's the word he used, if she was hostile to the idea of Rick having custody, and if this was, what problems are going to be caused. That's what he's trying to figure out. And certainly at his demeanor, the district judge's demeanor, towards the end of the hearing, when he complimented both parties on their parenting, said what a difficult decision this was, and acknowledged that both of them had been good parents, I think takes away that any sting of bias that could be argued. I just don't think it's there.
How much time did he get in the summertime, Rick?
I don't know specifically off the top of my head how much time. I do know that the court said that he would grant him the most liberal visitation possible whenever he could be in Phoenix. He could have the kids. I think that applied generally. It certainly applied to every weekend.
What about the kids coming back here?
That, I believe, is what is going on in actuality, that he brings the children back here to visit now. And certainly counsel can contradict me if that's wrong.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, you got 2 minutes and 35 seconds.
Yeah, to clear things up. I guess first I'd like to talk about whether there were orders, previous orders that I had discussed. On the hearing on November 6, 2013, District Court Judge stated, Dad will have the children in his possession, his custody. You'll have visitation on weekends, meaning the mother. He also assessed a child support.
Was that part of the mediation that occurred?
No, Your Honor.
What they agreed to?
No, Your Honor. This is before the mediation. This is the hearing when he ordered the mediation. This is the initial hearing on the motion for primary custody and relocation.
Okay, and then he ordered mediation?
Then he ordered mediation, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so this was to stay in place until some mediation agreement?
Correct, until a final determination.
Well, a final determination, you characterized it as a temporary custody situation, so it's really not a final determination. It's whatever they decided in mediation in the interim.
Oh, I agree, Your Honor. The custody order is on November 6th and on December 16th.
Is there a written order to that effect that says he's got custody and she's got visitation?
In the minutes only, Your Honor.
It's a minute order, though.
Yes, Your Honor. And the same thing happened on December 16th hearing after they came back from mediation with no agreement. The court again ordered primary custody to Rick, and he assessed child support to Melanie. And she was working at that time. It's significant to notice that child support he assessed was based on the statutory amount for a non-custodial parent. So in both of those hearings, the judge did order primary custody to Rick, and he ordered child custody paid from Melanie to Rick. And for the reasons we stated earlier, we believe those orders, temporary as they are, establish existing custody.
And she was already in Arizona?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Let's see. So the other, one of the contentions of the respondent are that the district court judge did follow the Potter analysis because they established primary custody in primary custody with Melanie first and then good faith for the move and allowed her to relocate. Where that cannot be what happened because the judge, one that we've talked about, did not do a best interest of child analysis. And if he had, it would have come out to joint custody. Because the judge said, Rick, if you move to Phoenix, Your Honor, may I finish my question?
Yes, please.
The judge said, Rick, if you move to Phoenix, I will grant you joint custody. So the only reason he could not grant joint custody was because he allowed Melanie to move. So it's the cart before the horse situation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, very good. Counsel, thank you both for your work and efforts in this case and the arguments today. And this case will stand submitted. The court will stand in recess until 10 a.m.